Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to wherever you are, and welcome back to another edition of the SPT podcast. Today, we're actually joined by a UK sprints coach, name of David Sadkin, who last year took an athlete to the World Championships and is starting to really progress his own career. And we discussed, actually, how did he get into coaching? What has been his pathway? And what does he recommend for up-and-coming coaches, along with a little bit of a discussion about his training philosophy. I hope you enjoy this one. Welcome to the Sports Performance Training Podcast with Stu and Aid. Welcome back to the Sports Performance Training Podcast with myself, Stu, and with my good colleague, Aidan. And Aidan, this is actually quite a good podcast day, because not only is it episode 8, which is obviously the iTunes curse, it's actually our very first podcast with a guest.
Yes. Excited about this one, Stu.
Very excited. So everyone in the UK is obviously going to know this guy, because he seems to have jumped onto the scene a little bit and had got some really good athletes already linked with himself. I'll let him introduce himself properly. So over to yourself.
How's it going?
So yeah, just tell us about your name and a little bit of history about what you're currently doing.
Yeah, so my name's David Sadkin, and like you said, I've kind of just come up onto the scene as a track coach quite recently, but been around in the kind of track and field scene now since about 2010, so it's about 10 years now I've been kind of around, but only been coaching full-time now for the past 2 years. Predominantly my background was around strength and conditioning. That's what I did my undergraduate degree in. Then enjoyed that so much I decided to stay on and do a postgraduate. But besides that, I did pretty much every course that was available outside of university, like level qualification. Spent most of my time gaining practical experiences over the years, but came to a crossroads where I realised that I needed to kind of get that formal education. So that's what led me into the S&C route. Then I went on to do my postgraduate, which was in applied physiology. Just to give myself a bit of a, add another string to the bow as such, you know, to branch out rather than being stuck in one trade.
I love applied physiology. That is absolutely brilliant. I've noticed actually on your story, you've posted quite a few, I know people have asked you for recommendations, and you've posted a few books that are actually about physiology, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, physiology, people, when you mention physiology to most people, they just think marathons, like cycling on a bike and with a mask on your face. And there's a lot more, you know, there's a lot more to it, particularly in sprinting, it gets overlooked, you know, like the neuromuscular and morphological adaptations that occur with power training and sprint training, strength training, they're critical, you know? I think they get overlooked. So it's important to gain that understanding.
I know I'm probably jumping the gun a little bit here, because obviously we're part of the conversation, but obviously with your background in applied physiology, do you think that's probably paid more of a dividend in your 400 meter training coaching?
Do you know, for me, I wasn't academic as a young person. I guess I'm not that old, but I feel like I'm old. I was never that academic, so that's why I tried to pursue all the routes possible without having to do formal education, you know. So that's why I worked with Michael Johnson out in the States, so that was quite pivotal in my kind of 400 meter exploration, talking about Clyde Hart, training guys like Jeremy Warner out there. I mean, bit of a surreal experience at the time. Then that was why I was like, well, I've got the applied side, and then I was looking and I saw that there was the applied side and there's the academic side, and there was a lot of people that could talk to you like a textbook, but they couldn't apply it, and vice versa. There was a lot of people that could apply it, like myself, who would always provide the right drill or the right cue, but if you was questioned as to why you're doing that, I wouldn't. I'm feeling this, and Yeah, that's what led me down the education route.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where did you go to uni in the end? Where did you go? Where did you settle with?
So I went to St Mary's University in Twickenham.
Okay, yeah. Great uni.
Yeah, so originally I tried... It's funny, originally I applied for Brunel, but again, because I didn't have any... I didn't have the relevant GCSEs, they wouldn't even consider me, regardless that I was applying as a mature student. So yeah. Luckily at the time, there was a person named Rich Blagrove, who was the head of S&C at St Mary's. So he's quite well known in the S&C environment for his work with endurance athletes. And
is he the guy who worked with England Institute of Sport on all their distance running stuff?
I'm unsure about that. I know he was the head of St Mary's S&C. He's wrote a book of S&C for endurance runners, and I think he's the lead at Loughborough University now.
Oh, that's probably where I know the name, because I'm up at Loughborough at the moment.
Yeah, you'd have heard of him. So luckily, again, through who you know, not what you know, he was like, look, don't worry about you, Cass. Email me and we'll sort it out for you. So I was like, oh, perfect. So I got in.
Amazing.
Got into there. And yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a surreal experience to begin with, because again, I was slightly older than most of the people. There for probably different reasons than quite a few of the people. And yeah, just really wanted to learn. And funnily enough, compared to school, I actually really enjoyed it. And then that's why I then decided to just keep pursuing down that education route. And yeah, then alongside my master's degree, I also managed to land myself a role at the English Institute of Sport. So I was S&C at Bisham Abbey with GB Hockey for the whole of the last season.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
So that was really good. And again, that was extremely insightful, which really has really helped me as well as another string to the bow, particularly looking at S&C from a real scientific point of view.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a fan of data management, data handling. I can't stand it, but I know it has to be done. And that's definitely a real good tool set that I took away from the EIS for sure.
Okay, yeah, no, totally understand that. And you know what, as an older student, I went to uni at the age of 24. How old were you?
I was 25.
25, there you go, and I was in a 5-year course, so.
Yeah, cool.
You can never stop learning.
You can't, no. And it's that funny analogy, like I say it to my girlfriend all the time, like back then I thought I knew everything, but actually I knew very little. And now I know a fair bit, but I feel like I don't know that much.
It is massively true, and I think when you first become a coach, you kind of get this impression that you know you're everything that you think is already predetermined by someone else, right? So you think you already know it. You've gone through this course, you go, oh, this is exactly what I need to do, right? You think you know the world, someone says something different, and you go, no, this is it. But then the more you get into it and the more you start actually trying to learn other stuff, you realize, actually, I don't know jack all.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true.
Yeah, it just comes crazy, doesn't it? It really. But that's the whole point, isn't it? I think life should be about long learning.
Of course.
In reality, especially when it comes to athletics, I mean, geez, we learn something new every year. I know there's a whole thing of a lot of things are just rehashed, they're just the same thing from the past, just new clothing kind of wear.
Of course.
But you know, as I said before, with your history and physiology, physiology is developing quite a bit, right? And our understanding of how that interacts with the actual body.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I was looking back actually, because you said that you got into athletics around 2010, because you actually did do some athletics, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I mean, I wasn't particularly any good, but I tried. and that's what I think it's quite common, I think, in kind of the coaching world. A lot of the time, some of the coaches tend to be, I say I use the word failed, but I mean more like, athletes who didn't quite make it.
A less successful athlete.
Yeah, they tend to go and really explore the reasons as to why and try to solve the problems. And I think that's what makes them. Yeah, for sure.
I think that's actually part and parcel for myself, John. I remember we discussed on a couple of other podcasts that very early on in my career, I kept getting injured. I kept, you know, every year there'd be a new injury, something would go along, and I wanted to know why. What on earth was going on with my body? And you just kind of take it from there, don't you? Get that, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah, it's definitely.
So I just want to touch actually on bit of your recent success, actually, because obviously you started coaching a British athlete, Toby Harries, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had an outstanding kind of almost first year in 400.
Yeah.
Ran a brilliantly low 46 and actually got chosen for GB team to go to Doha, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
How was that experience for you?
Yeah, so it was good. So I've been to quite a few world champs because my girlfriend, I'm probably familiar with Shalana, Oscar and Clark. So I've been to quite a few championships and kind of been around that scene for a while now. But it was definitely a different experience having being there with an actual athlete you're coaching as opposed to just providing S&C and support to.
A new stress, right?
Yeah, I mean, for me, when we got there, I just tried to keep it the same. You know, there was nothing, there's nothing more you can, when you're in a holding camp, for me, the work's already done. You know, the work's done. You just got to just make sure you're maintaining and so you're ready for when that race comes. So there wasn't really much stress there, you know, particularly taking into account the climate and the track. I mean, Aidan will tell you, it was hot.
It was hot. Yeah, seriously.
Ridiculously hot. Like, we were getting there at like 5-6 o'clock and it's still hitting, you know, mid to late 30s. It was hot.
Yeah. And we were sweating so much, drinking so much water. Oh,
that alone, like, proved the challenge in itself, because it'd have been very easy to overcook your athlete in that environment.
Definitely.
And then in conjunction, it's a good thing, but the track was like running on concrete. So it's very, very fast. So everyone was running like season's best or personal best left, right and centre. So again, you kind of got to be a bit careful that you don't completely fry them and they fall off the mountain when you actually get to the competition.
Yes. But, so David, that track they had out in Doha, in Dubai, sorry, that's the exact same track that we train on day in, day out in Coventry.
It is now. We're lucky that we're linked with a university that the university itself has no interest in athletics whatsoever, but they're interested in facilities. So they've just laid down a brand new Mondo X track.
they got rid of the old Mondo and put down new Mondo. We were like, oh, fantastic.
they don't have any races there, though, do they? I never hear of any. They're
very, very few. You know what? In 2005 was the first year that we got a Mondo track. We were one of the first tracks in the UK to get Mondo, and it probably has one race on it a year, which is like a youth league.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you should use that for some open meets, especially them sprint evenings, you know, people would flock. Yeah.
Well, that's what we're trying to do a little bit. Last year, we kind of opened up a little bit more. And now we've got a Mondo X. I mean, come on, if you want to go somewhere fast,
you need to
come up to the Warwick Uni track and our open races.
Yeah.
And in fact, actually, that leads me on to one of your other athletes, Luke.
Yeah.
Lennon Ford.
So Luke Lennon Ford, obviously, is a representative in Ireland now, a former British Olympian. But actually, he's from the Midlands. He's actually, you know, he's just around the corner. And funnily enough, I know Aidan knows him well. I've raced against him and all that kind of things in the past. Obviously, he wasn't as good as he is now. It was, you know, but he still beat us. he'll know the place pretty well. Because obviously, he's just joined your group as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he joined the start of this season. Him and another boy, Retchmore Miller, also joined me. So I've got
a group.
Three of those guys now, yeah. So interesting. It's pretty really good. They all work and bounce off each other really well. I mean, each person brings a different strength to each other. So the winter was going really well. Obviously, coronavirus is terrible for the world, but in terms of track and field, it's a shame that the season happened, you know, because everyone was going really well.
How you been coping with coaching during this period?
I was gonna say,
I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat as everyone else, you know. You just go in with the flow in that sense, because you don't really know when the first races are going to be and what's going to happen. So I've kind of learned more towards, what's the best way to describe it? I mean, more volume rather than intensity, just because the fact that they're not getting treatment either. They're all still training individually wherever they are. I mean, everyone has a field, you know, and they've all got bits and bobs at their house, you know, whether it be dumbbells or kettlebells or a barbell, whatever it is they have, and write their program based around what what they have. But it's more I'm just maintaining, ticking over, just trying to make sure that as soon as this lockdown comes out, that we can kind of resume some form of normality without being too far behind, so we can salvage a season if there is to be one. But if not, we're just going to keep working through, make sure that we're ticking all the boxes, we're working all of our weaknesses, you know, we're not leaving any stones unturned, so that when we do start winter, you know, we don't have to spend weeks doing a general prep phase or working on any little issues that we need to get out of the way with before we start transitioning into the actual winter training. We can just kind of start going straight away and hopefully open up a bit earlier, you know. So yeah, potentially a blessing in disguise, you know, it gives us an extra year for the Olympic Games, which for all three of them is definitely a good thing.
Yeah,
for sure, gives us an extra year, another year stronger, another year faster, fitter. So yeah, it should be interesting.
So with that then, obviously, because you've got another year, what's your general training like? What's your normal philosophy? Because obviously you've got a couple of 400 meter guys there, and obviously everyone loves to debate 400, long to short, short to long, yeah. Concurrent, you know, everyone, you know, throwing a vertical integration quote somewhere.
Yeah.
And you know, we're good to go, right?
Yeah.
what's your kind of take on all that? I mean, you know, I don't expect you to be, say, you're completely this or completely that, but just a bit about what you tend to do, really.
So, I mean, the main thing for me is injury free, regardless of like whatever you're doing. That's the main thing, because unless you're injury free, you're not running, you know. And if you can't put races together, you're not running fast. So that's the main thing for me. So that if that's kind of your base, then filtering off of that, we're looking at, well, I would rather the guys are on the start line in the year in 95% shape and do 10, 15, 20 races, than to get them into that 100, 101% shape and only last a couple of races. So I always err on the side of undercooked. So my training philosophy is we only train 3 days a week. Similar to what you do back in your club days. And that stemmed from a few reasons. One of the rationales for that is I heard a lot of times you hear it floating about in the air that, training 6 days a week now, you know. I used to train 3 days a week on a Thursday, Tuesday night, and I'm not running any quicker. So I just thought there might be some merit in that. I'm not saying that's the only way. This is just my thought process. And then I thought, okay. And I thought, then why is that? And then I just thought, well, again, if you look at some people who look at high day, low day in terms of intensity, I was thinking, well, actually, if you go 3 days a week, and you can make all three of those days high intensity and quality, you've actually got 48 hours in between each session to allow for optimal recovery. So actually, you're never really going to be running in such a fatigued state where you're going to start going down in terms of overtraining. So I kind of base it around that, around recovery and injury prevention. So they'll train twice on that one day. So you run and you do your lift, or you run and you do your circuit, or you run and you do your rehab as such. But it just allows that rest. And the feedback is that I get is, you know, if I had to do another day, I don't think I could. Because we're then, every session, I can make sure that we're at the exact percentage I want them to be at. And they can always hit it, because we're not going to have the factors of course, you're going to have the factors of fatigue as you go throughout the season. I mean... But in terms of, you know, being detrimental to the times that you're trying to hit, we never really have that problem. And I think that was definitely one of the main rationales for the success with Toby last year, was that I can count on one hand, and I probably don't even need the whole hand, how many times we had an okay or bad session.
Yeah.
But you're consistent.
Because just every session was okay. It might not have been amazing, but it was like, okay, hit what I wanted to hit. And yeah, like I said, it was maybe 3 to 5 times that I was like, well, it's a little bit down today. And normally there was a justification for why that was. So that's kind of then how I stumbled onto it. And then, moved forward through that process.
So what do you do on the off days? Is it completely off, or is it like a regen day or something?
Yeah, so they have three complete rest days. Then 3 days full on training, and then one day will be use the word prehab lightly, but from one of the guys that we see, they have a that injury prevention program that they can just do at home by themselves on the off day, in conjunction with, you know, Compex, Normatec, foam roll, stretch.
All the toys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're a fan of all the toys. I think, yeah, it's just the amount of stuff everyone's got between the group is just ridiculous.
Yeah, as long as you're using the right tool for the right job, that's the best analogy, you know.
Yeah. God, I seem to... Sorry, one second. I seem to have broken my computer. Like an idiot. So yeah, so on your working days then, so obviously you're doing a double session, so you're training quite intensely, really. So I'm guessing, yeah, traditionally, regarding whether you're going to be speed endurance or even specific endurance, you're going to be almost short to long, I guess.
So,
or at least high intensity. You're going to do long stuff probably a lot harder, or...
So I kind of break, I mean, without giving away the secrets, I mean, I kind of break it down into...
No, give them away, come on.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're looking at a week, I don't look at it as a week, I look at it as like, each one of those training days is a third of the week as such. So, for example, on a Monday, it's very much a short to long program. But then on a Wednesday, it's very much a long to short program. But it's the... in terms of the short to long and long to short, it's the physiological adaptation that you're trying to achieve on that day. For example, the short to long on the Monday is acceleration bias, you know, so it's, you're looking at anaerobic power, anaerobic capacity, short speed endurance, you know. Then Wednesday might be long to short, so you start off, you know, at your tempos, so you go through your extensive to your intensive, and then you come down the paradigm from that. And then on the weekend, depending on the time of year, and what they actually need, that will dictate kind of that session. And I just found that kind of like opposite ends. Yeah. When you actually get into the season, I find then you've been working your speed from day one. You know, so the first session in, if we're on a Monday, they're going to have, like, for example, two sets of 860s at around 85%. You know, we're running fast from day one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then by the time that gets to summer, that Monday now, you might be doing 390s of 10 minutes recovery on the money. So you've kind of gone from a short to a long program in hyphens as such. But then on the Wednesday, you might start off in the winter, for example, I don't know, it might be 2 400s, 3 300s, 4 200s, you know, but they're all at 70%. But then by the time you get into the season, now that's 300, 200, 100, again, 90, 95% on the money with big recovery. So it kind of crosses over in the middle. So your short then becomes your longer stuff. So you're working on your speed, being able to maintain your speed, and then the fitness comes down. So you kind of meet in the middle, if that makes sense, what I'm trying to put across.
Yeah, absolutely. So you tend to work from kind of aerobic into extensive, into intensive, into more specific endurance.
Yeah, and then I start off with short speed and then increase the distance of that speed. So in terms of short to long, long to short, it's actually a combination of the two. I don't know what you would call it if you was to group it all together. Just come up with a name, but I'm sure I'm not the only person who does it. There might be a name for it out there, but yeah, that's my approach.
Yeah, it's fair. Do you know what? It's actually quite similar to my own 400 meter approach, to be honest with you. I like to build in some of the longer stuff early and then come through the intensive stuff into the specific, with a little bit of special endurance thrown in there, kind of bridge that gap.
Yeah. And I think a lot of coaches do that now. And I mean, that just highlights the, you know, what you said before, the vertical integration. You know, you kind of have to do,
yeah.
You have to do everything all year round. It's just the percentage of how much you do at those things that dictate the training. Because, yeah, I mean, the long to short to long. I mean, there's people who have run world records doing both. But there's still pros and cons to both. And for me, I as a coach, I take a very, very individualized approach. So what works for one athlete doesn't work for another athlete, you know. One athlete, you can see that on the start line of 100 meters, you know, you've got one athlete who's 6 foot and, you know, he can clean 150 kilos, and you've got someone who's 5 foot 6 and they can clean 40 kilos. So they're what they need are two very different training plans. And that dictates my training substantially, you know, makes it a lot more specific, and that's also a reason why I would never have a big group either, because that'd be too hard. Brain space. That's kind of where I lean towards.
I like that. I like that. Again, I think there's a bit of an argument depending on which coaching circle you're kind of in, and you must be short to long, or you must be long to short. And I think some people get a little bit tied up on that. I think you need to know both or all kind of realms of training in order to then come up with your own mix or whatever suitable for the athletes or whatever, you know.
Yeah. And again, that's why I think that, like what I said earlier, is that's why it's so important that the best coaches and the best practitioners out there have that scientific knowledge that they can apply, because then if you actually can understand all the different types of periodization themes that you can use, then you can actually then make a good decision on what it is you're actually then going to try achieve, as opposed to just being an athlete and going through a short to long program and then doing the short to long program because it worked for you, but not actually understanding that actually this athlete might benefit from doing this or benefit from doing this, you know.
No, definitely. I think the broader scope of knowledge you can get, I think the better coach you become. It's like I said at the beginning, wasn't it, Bob? Out of, you know, the more you learn, the less you know. And I think that's what you need to understand. It's like, you know, you can get siloed into a particular type of training, and then, you know, that might work because you're A, consistent, or B, because you've got developing athletes. But once you get to a certain level, like you have with some athletes that are obviously, you know, very good level, it becomes more nuanced than that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So actually, just developing onto that then, because I don't want to keep you too long. We talked about your kind of your steps into coaching there through university, going to university quite late, doing your master's in, you know, applied physiology and all that kind of work.
Yeah.
What do you think? So obviously we're trying to aim some stuff at like developing coaches who might not have that same kind of background as yourself, or the necessary inclination to go and read a million books or something like that. But what do you think is, if you. What would be your go-to resources, or kind of what you'd recommend for any kind of developing coach to really kind of learn to kind of get a better scope of athletics or even speed in general? What would be your go-to, for instance? What's the one book that you go to all the time, or the one website, or you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'll get onto the book, but I mean, for me, the number one thing that I would recommend, which tops all the books you can read, is go and shadow a good coach. You know, go and shadow someone who's coaching fast athletes and learn, and then go shadow someone else and learn from them, and go around and see what all these different coaches are doing, because that's what I did. I spent time with quite a few different successful coaches and studied what they did, and then kind of, that's how you then can formulate and pick out bits from each program and kind of create your own one. So I'd say, in terms of a go-to thing, I would spend time on YouTube, you know, looking at what coaches are doing on there. I'd message, maybe think about emailing some track coaches. Can I come and spend a few days with you? Can I have a chat with you, you know, and understand that way? Because again, what a journal tells you, or what a book tells you, particularly in track and field, sometimes it really doesn't apply.
No.
you can't justify. And it's interesting, because when I was talking to some of my lecturers on the S&C course, they're saying that track is probably one of the few sports that, actually being an S&C coach in it, it definitely pays off to have experience of being in the sport, because quite a lot of the things you do don't stick to the conventional, you know, rep schemes and recovery patterns and what you would do when you do it, you know.
That's kind of the mix between science and art of coaching for athletics,
of course,
isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, in terms of books, I read a lot of journals as opposed to books.
You're an article man. Keep it nice and sweet, right?
Yeah, articles, just so you can keep up to date with the latest research that's out there. But good books, I mean, you know, the, what's it called? Applied Running Biomechanics and Physiology by Franz Bosch, I think it is. That's a good book. Running, what else have we got? The Law of Running, if you're interested in physiology, is quite a thick book. LORE, Law of Running, that's a really good
resource, a good book
for physiology. Periodization training for sports, you know, you can't go wrong with with a bit of Tudor Bumper.
We talked about that on the last podcast.
We did discuss that book on the last one. It's on my shelf right here. We're discussing team sports, and obviously that book, for if you're an athletics coach or any kind of team sports coach, that book is a great resource.
Oh, definitely. And then if you want some of the more like heavier stuff in terms of books and want to understand how like the body works, etc., you know, Anatomy Trains,
mm-hmm.
that's an awesome book. And probably the Bible for an S&C coach would be a book called Super Training.
Yes.
You know, by Verkhoshansky. It's translated from Old Russian, so it's not the easiest book to read. But, I mean, if you're an S&C coach or if you're interested in power, strength development, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I don't think it gets much better than that book, to be honest.
I have a copy of that, which is probably the most dog-eared book that I have, and I hate folding pages, but this is the one book that is just absolutely ruined. It has the worst spine, every dog-eared page. It's just, but it is a great book, that one. I think that's a brilliant go-to.
But yeah, like I said, I mean, I try to stick to the journals, and that's just through people that I spoke to.
Yeah.
Just to keep up with it, yeah.
So in summary, go get a mentor, go observe a couple of different coaches doing different things, you know, research what they're doing, what their athletes are, how their athletes even race, maybe, you know, see, are they fast start the 400 or are they fast finishers, you know, and then go and see these different coaches, see how they're coaching, but also read some books and articles to stay up to date.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, I mean, you go and see all these coaches, that's what you want to do, gain all that experience and the insights into what all these people do to make a successful athlete, and then go away and then read the books to understand, well, why has that program worked, you know, and then you know, you've got a recipe there.
Yeah, that all makes sense. Yeah, so what's next for you then? What's next for on the agenda for yourself?
We'll see what happens this year, won't we?
Yeah, trials hasn't been cancelled yet, has it?
Oh good, yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, trials, yeah.
Well, they're not the trials, it's British champs now, they're no longer the trials.
It's not trials, is it? Yeah.
There's no Olympics this year. So I guess you're just trying to get three people to the Olympics next year at the moment, right?
Pretty much, it's all about 2021, yeah. All about those Olympics. Try and get these guys as quick as possible, put them in the best position possible, and yeah, see what happens.
I appreciate that. And if anyone wants to reach out to yourself or ask any random question, just like I possibly did, how would they get hold of yourself?
Yeah, so best thing's on Instagram. So that's just my name, @DavidSadkin. And my email address is on my Instagram. So yeah, that's probably the best way to contact me.
Nice
okay.
and easy, I like that.
Yeah.
Nothing fancy. No, actually, I had to go fancy. Someone's already got my name, so it just annoys me. You can't choose your own name. Like, come on. I know there's obviously people with the same name, but damn it.
Too late, mate.
I know, yeah. I need to find a new social media platform that I can just kind of then do my own name, so it's cool. I'm not sure how that's going to work, but yeah. Well, thank you for your time there, David. Really, really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Some good insights there into your career and, of course, your coaching. And I hope any developing coaches out there kind of get a good insight into that as well. So thank you for the call today.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Okay, no worries, Aiden, stop. Sorry. Aiden, stop the recording.
Yeah, 1 second. Oh, that was a screenshot.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sports Performance Training Podcast. If you like it, please give us a subscribe and share amongst your friends or anything like that. And of course, give us a positive review. We really appreciate that. And we will see you next time for another edition of the Sports Performance Training Podcast.